Good morning. Welcome to Balanced Life. I'm the host, Renee Gable with In Touch Marketing Concepts, and I'm happy to have Pastor Eifer back with us again today. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Glad to have you. And, you know, I noticed we've spoken a few times, but I noticed you're a graduate of Cedarville University, and my niece from Hawaii will be attending this fall. So it has such great accreditation and a reputation.
Yes, I met my wife out there, so it has special interest for me as well.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
That's great. Pastor Eifer, you are a counselor at the Valley Forge Biblical Counseling Center, and we've been privileged to hear you speak on divorce and such sensitive topics. But today we want to talk about another sensitive topic, and that's about anger. Mm-hmm. So what are the different types of anger? We all don't like to feel any of that, so...
Well, there's a lot of different ways that people look at anger, and some people even deny that they're angry at times, and others realize they have a problem with it. And so the outward expression of it can take different levels of emotion, if you will. Mm-hmm. I guess we try to categorize it really in two primary ways. And an easy way to remember that is kind of a play here. It's blow up and clam up.
Mm, true.
Those two. So a blow up type of as just it sounds, the blow up form of anger would be when that person becomes emotionally aroused, and it's rather quickly. You know, it's not a slow burn, but they're aroused to wrath and a focus on their emotion that they've been wronged, and it's kind of explodes and will come up quickly into a, you know, hard words. It might be, you know, with physical action, that type of thing, but it's a blowing up of an emotion very quickly. That's the most common form that we think about anger. It's the explosive type where they vent their feelings right away, and it might not take long to get them to that spot where they just have to let it go, and then they de-escalate quickly as well. But it might be what we call a short fuse, where it's not taking too much to get them there. Yeah. That's the blow-up side. Again, probably the most common. The less common side, and oftentimes we don't think about people being angry in this way, but it's the clam-up side.
Mm-hmm.
The clam-up side is, again, just as you would expect, they begin to internalize the problem. They don't want to talk about it. They don't explode. Someone hurts their feelings. They had an injustice done to them. In some way, there was some type of catalyst or circumstance happening in life. And rather than express it in any way, they just took it to heart. Now, that doesn't mean that they weren't angry because someone couldn't see it on the outside. It means simply that that anger was turned inward. And though they could cover it up and hide it, it didn't just go away. Now oftentimes what happens with the clam up person, that can be the more dangerous because it's a series. When they do finally get to the breaking point, it's not just over one issue. It might be over 5, 10, 15, 20 issues that were stored up and stored up and stored up, to which point now those who clam up typically can have a worse blow up because it's a protracted period of buildup that leads to the final explosion. But normally it's the quiet, you know, type that to just kind of hide and keep it in.
Oh, look out for the quiet types now.
That's right.
Yeah, I would think that too. I think that resentment would build up, and then, like you said, then it just bursts into anger over a period of time. So is anger always wrong?
Well, we'd like to think that. Of course, we often think, well, you know, that person's angry with me. That's not right. That's not fair. And most anger probably is wrong. But in reality, all anger is not wrong. In fact, as I think about it, practicing from a biblical perspective, we read in the scriptures in the New Testament, in the Gospel of John there, about Jesus himself being angry. And if you know the Bible at all, often people, you know, talk about, you know, Jesus overturning the money tables. Well, we don't believe Jesus was sinfully angry because he never sinned, but he was still angry in that he overturned the tables. And the reason he did that, and it was not anger, sinful anger. He was angry, but it was a righteous anger. And that's what we call that righteous indignation. It's for a righteous cause, not for an unrighteous or a sinful cause. And we can talk about that further later. But Christ turned over the money changers, and it wasn't because he was being harmed himself. It wasn't an affront to him. He was saying in that passage where he did that, that he was literally saying that you've made my father's house a house of thieves or a den of thieves, but it's supposed to be called a house of prayer. So he was defending the right ways of God and not protecting himself. It wasn't a selfishly motivated anger. That's why it wasn't sinful anger on Jesus' part. He was defending God and his righteous ways.
And I wonder if sometimes people mistake that for passion, that they're feeling for something they feel is righteous in their life, and they feel very passionate about it, and they express themselves either in anger or yelling.
Yeah, that's very typical, is because they feel a certain way about something. If they didn't get their way, if it wasn't something that went, that was pleasing to them, it's almost like they can feel then angry about it. And because it's selfishly motivated, that would be a wrong type of anger, not the right type of anger that we're talking about. For example, we can get angry as Christians over the harm done to innocent people. When we think about abortion, you know, when we think about the innocent suffering wrongfully, you know, we're hearing a lot even in this world about Christians being persecuted for doing nothing wrong. You know, we can get angry and upset about the injustices that happen in our world. So anger, righteous anger, hates injustice. Mm-hmm. It hates immorality. It hates ungodliness and unbelief and every other wicked form of evil. We can hate that and be righteously angry about that.
Okay, as long as we take constructive ways, I would think, to express it and try to correct or try to help someone in need. But so when is the anger sinful?
Well, anger is sinful when there's a number of ways where anger becomes sinful. And as I mentioned earlier, let me just allude on that further. When anger is selfishly motivated, that's probably when it's the most obvious, but people don't think about it that way. In other words, if I don't get my way, and we think about typically in the car where someone cuts us off, it's like, ooh, they didn't have the right to cut me off. I wanted that spot and I wanted to be in front of them. And so that causes a problem. Mm-hmm. Someone gyps in line, those little things that way. Someone spoke behind our back and made us look bad in public or at work. You know, they gossiped or something that hurt us. When we want to take revenge or we want to get even because someone did something to hurt us personally and we want to get back at them, it's a selfishly motivated anger, which would be an unrighteous anger, as opposed to giving it over to God and saying, God, you take this anger. I know that in my spirit, I want to get even. I want to have retribution. I want to get revenge. That would be taking matters into our own hands and having it be selfishly motivated anger, and that's where it becomes sinful. That'd be one area. Another area, as we think about the scriptures, would be when anger is allowed to linger, where it's not dealt with right away. The Bible once again says in the book of Ephesians that we're not to allow the sun to get down upon our wrath. And just as the verse says there, we should deal with our issues as close to the incident that happened as possible and not let it be a protracted burning in our soul that goes from one day to two to 10 to 1 month to 2 months to 10 months to a year. And for many people have held grudges, as we call it, for years and years and years. When we let the sun go down upon our wrath, it really is usually hurting the person the most who is holding on to it more than the person that has originally done the issue against us.
They're the prisoner of the anger, really, if you think about it. And really, it comes down to forgiveness too, don't you think? To be able to have the ability to move forward.
That's the ultimate answer for all of anger is mm-hmm. forgiveness. And even though we might not be able to in person forgive someone if they haven't asked for forgiveness, mm-hmm. we're supposed to have the attitude of Christ in our heart, just as he said on the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." We are to have a spirit ready to forgive when we've been wronged and when someone's been angry against us, let's say. We must be ready to forgive the moment they come to us to seek it, to make it right. And that's the attitude we should have, so that we're not remained a prisoner in our own angst and hurt, and ultimately anger protracted for a period of time becomes bitterness.
It does. I just think that when that builds up, we're not able to be the people that God wants us to be. We're not able to love. We're so focused on, like you said, the revenge and such. And I know when someone cuts me off in traffic, I always say, "Jesus loves you, and right now I'm trying." So I think God gives me humor to deal with some of those things, and then you let it go, like you say.
That's right. Well, some of the other things that would be forms of sinful anger, that's what you were asking about. Mm-hmm. So if it's selfishly motivated, that would be one area, just like we said, where we allow it to linger and we don't mm-hmm. get it fixed right away. Another area that becomes sinful anger is when we attack the person and not the problem. Mm-hmm. And we go for character assassinations mm-hmm. where we now begin to say, "You're this, and you're that." And we use harsh language to attack them as a person, as opposed to focusing our energy and passion and emotion towards solving the problem.
And you see so much more of that with social media. People go right out on these different mediums and they do attack people's character. Additional ways of doing that today, which are not good.
Yeah, it's true. And sometimes people hide behind the anonymity of mm-hmm. social media because you can't see the face, so you don't always know who's saying it, but it gets put out there. Mm-hmm. And that's destructive. And people feel more emboldened because of the impersonalness of social media, because we're not face-to-face. They wouldn't say something face-to-face that they could say, you know, through some social media vein.
True. It's a cowardness a bit,
yes.
too.
The other thing is, too, we're talking about sinful anger, I think would be a time when it dominates the inner man, when it becomes a consuming issue within us. So we think about it each day. We think about it throughout the day, and it becomes almost like a dominant force in our life. And so what we like to teach is really, and here's something to think about, is that people don't really make us angry. We might say, "Well, yeah, they do." You know, I can absolutely say, "Yes, they do." I can think of 4 or 5 people who make me angry right now without even thinking about it.
I'm not naming any names.
People make me angry. But honestly, as I get to the end of this, we'll see, man, people don't make us angry. But we could say people make us angry. Things don't make us angry. That little tool that we were working with and it slipped and we you know, knocked our knuckles or something like that, you know, get us upset and angry. Well, that's an inanimate object. That doesn't make us angry. Events or circumstances don't make us angry, where, you know, it didn't go our way or someone was late for showing up to go to an event together. Those circumstances don't make us angry. Satan can't even make us angry. He can dangle the carrot in front of us and tempt us to become angry and try to work circumstances into our life to tempt us to say, "Hey, wasn't that something? You were wronged. You know, you did something bad." And like Geraldine with the Flip Wilson show, "The devil made me do it."
Yeah.
Well, honestly, we know that.
I remember that.
Me too. And we like to blame the devil, but ultimately the devil doesn't have that level of power to make us angry. And so if people don't make us angry and things don't make us angry and events don't make us angry and Satan doesn't make us angry, then what's the source? And the source comes down to we make ourselves angry. Hmm. In other words, we choose to get angry at someone or something, a circumstance, an event, a situation that we didn't like or didn't go our way. We chose in our heart to react to that in a sinful way. So then you make you angry. I make me angry. It's a choice that we make, and that's what has to be rooted out of us. This comes back to the segment that we had then last time where we talked about idolatry, idolatry is not the little statue on our, you know, on our dashboards or in our front yards. Idolatry is anything that we put before God. And so if we are allowing our anger to dominate us and a person that has done something wrong against us to consume us and to react to that in a sinful reaction way, then our anger becomes idolatry. We're in control. We have to make it right and fix it, and that's consuming us. Then God is no longer on the throne where we are trying to please Him. We're trying to satisfy our own emotional, you know, problem that's creating the anger.
Yeah, I never looked at it from that perspective. I've looked at situations may anger me, and why can't it be different, and what can I do to help? But I never thought about internally, looking internally, and just making sure you manage that, which I guess we all do in our own way.
We all do. It's a realistic, you know, self-defense that we all have.
It's
to say,
true.
Hey, you know, if that person said something wrong against me or they did something to hurt me, I have the right to react to that because they shouldn't be allowed to do that to me. And rather than think, well, I can't think more highly of myself to such a degree that I have the right to retaliate because they did something back. Jesus taught us not to do that. Don't return evil for evil, but good for evil. If your enemy hungers, you feed him. You know, if he thirsts, you give him a drink. And in so doing, the Bible says it heaps coals of fire on their head, the burning pangs of conviction to get them to realize that what they did was wrong against us, and it's being pointed out by the good that we're doing back to them, almost like to bring a sense of guilt to their heart that they might want to make that right.
It just seems today people are I don't know if we have more chips on our shoulders, but we're always just so willing to attack first before listening or talking or communicating and working things through. So this is definitely a good lesson to correct that. And I want to go back a little bit to the blow up and clam up. And the people that you have counseled at the Valley Forge Biblical Counseling Center, do you find that more men blow up, more women? Are women more likely to clam up?
Yeah, that's a good observation. It depends on the personality type, of course. And women and men can have, you know, all sorts of personalities. And there are some angry women that might blow up. But I think, to your point, is I would say the majority of women are probably more the internalizers. They're not the explosive, you know, type. They're going to internalize and they're going to be hurt. Their feelings are going to be affected. And then internalizing that, they might withdraw and become quiet or become distant. And that's when, you know, over time, that internalized anger might make them more vulnerable to, you know, the attraction of someone else because they're too tired of being hurt at home. Mm-hmm. On the other side, it's the men who would tend to be more, with our aggressive nature, tend to be more the blow-up type of, you know, response. Again, not in every case. This is just a broad statement. But often, yes, the men are going to be more the blower uppers, if you will, and the ladies the clam uppers.
That's an interesting way of putting it. But I would think, too, that there's different levels of blowing up, too. One is just you say your thoughts and you move along. And sometimes the anger can escalate, too, to where it's a real problem.
Well, that's no doubt the case.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But yes, it's true that again, in any of the levels of anger, we see, you know, people can control it to some degree. And so they might use verbal, you know, initial, you know, a verbal, not a tirade even, but just a verbal rebuke. Mm-hmm. And that's what that's the expression of it. And it ends there. Mm-hmm. And for others, you know, they give the verbal rebuke, and they hear themselves in their own anger, and they're creating more anger in their own spirit.
True.
They're talking themselves into it the more they hear themselves talk.
Mm-hmm. And part of the counseling, do you do the anger management counseling? Like if it is blow-ups that go too far?
For sure.
Thing? Okay.
Absolutely. Yep. We're going to sit down and we'll get to the whole root of what's going on. And we'll look back and say, okay, what's their personality type and what have they been exposed to over the years? And has this been a problem for a long period of time? And how is their anger expressed? And we'll analyze all of that and then try to help them see if, in fact, it is a righteous or a sinful anger. And of course, if it's a sinful anger, then they're going to have to confess that to God. And then we try to counsel them in the scriptures to be able to get them to replace the sinful anger with righteous truth, with God's ways, with a gentle and a kind and a spirit-filled reaction.
So you not only give them different coping mechanisms, but you are called Valley Forge Biblical Counseling Center. So you work through the Bible and the examples and show them how to live through God's eyes, so to speak.
That's exactly right. We use mm-hmm. the Bible as our source of truth. And so we'll oftentimes go to an example in the scriptures. For example, when Paul had to withstand Peter to the face because Peter was acting as a hypocrite, Paul went to him in Galatians chapter 2 and spoke to him about that. And the Bible says that Paul withstood him to the face. In other words, he called Peter out on what he was doing. Now, we didn't read of Peter's response there, but Paul felt the need to be able to say, hey, look, this is wrong. And so sometimes we do have to speak the truth in love and help people deal, you know, with that anger in that way. I mentioned Jesus. Jesus was angry with the religious leaders, not only in the temple, but he was angry with the religious leaders also when he was getting ready to heal a man on the Sabbath. And in doing that, it was, they looked around and they were testing to see, is he going to heal on the Sabbath? And they were getting angry that he would possibly do work on the Sabbath, and work was considered healing a man in their view. And so the Bible says he looked on them with anger because he took more care for people than he did about even, you know, not working on the Sabbath. So an interesting point.
That is an interesting point. If anyone needs help with any type of anger issues and would like Pastor Eifert to help, he is with Valley Forge Biblical Counseling Center, and he can be reached at 866-828-9667 or via the website vfbcc.org. And any other final thoughts, Pastor Eifert, you'd like to give our audience?
Well, just in thinking about counseling someone, we do, that is a common thing that we counsel for, because we realize there's a lot of issues out there that with our economy, with family struggles, stresses, and so on. We want to be able to help people. Don't continue to suffer by continuing to stuff. And this is an encouragement to the audience not to continue to stuff those anger, hurt feelings down, because they can show up in forms of stress and unhappiness in life and argumentation and conflict in the home and many, many other things. We didn't really even talk about some of the symptoms related to anger, you know, in the scriptures, but there are lots of those. So go get help, and we want to be able to help in that way and use the scriptures as a means to be able to set people in the right direction.
That's wonderful. If you need help, again, it's Pastor Eifert at Valley Forge Biblical Counseling Center, vfbcc.org, or the phone number is 866-825-9667. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Renee with In Touch Marketing, and we're here today because a balanced life matters.
Be my song, Jesus.
I'm Renee Gable, the hostess from In Touch Marketing Concepts, and I'm so glad to have Dawn Cotillo back from Be Balanced Hormone Centers. Good morning, Dawn. How are you?
Good. good. I'm excited to be back.
Me too. If most of our listeners know that you're on the fourth Saturday of every month on The Balanced Life. And so glad to have you because we've had such great conversations regarding hormones and sugar levels. And today we have a great topic of hormones and sleep. And I just know of so many women in particular having trouble getting to sleep or falling asleep and then waking up. It seems like it's an epidemic.
Yes. It's kind of like when I was doing even more research, it's up to 30% of people in general, but I think more is women, that say they have some form of insomnia. And I like people to try to, when I have a client come in, I'll ask them, tell me what's going on. Can you not fall asleep when you lay your head down? That's one type of insomnia. And then, or can you fall asleep, like relatively easy, but then you wake up 2 or 3 hours later, and then usually when you wake up, you're up for a couple hours. So it is good for people to determine that. And as we discuss things today, we'll talk about ways to fall asleep, and then some of the tips at the end, I'm going to explain why it's important to stay asleep, obviously, and some things you can do that'll help you stay asleep so we can hit both of them.
Oh, good. So, okay. So do women have more issues with their sleep versus the men, and why? Why is that?
Well,
that's
we don't want a man bash here.
Loaded question.
Like, okay. Sometimes for women, and we've talked about this on other shows, we're more multitasking. It's not that we're working harder than men. We're not saying that. But women will have a lot of things on their mind. Like, I got to take care of the kids and the pets and then the house, and then I have my job, and then I'm taking care of my, my mother who's older. Or, like, they're more multitasking. Whereas men, a lot of times, are more direct. I got to go to work today, and they can have a lot to do at work. But they compartmentalize that, and sometimes when they come home, they'll just be able to come home, and I'm done for the day. Maybe they'll mow the lawn that night. But they'll sit down and drink a soda and watch TV or something like that. So women, I feel like, constantly have this ongoing forever to-do list in their head. So when they lay down to sleep, because they never get everything done they want to, that's on their brain. So that's what makes them a little bit more stressed than men and feeling like they're not finished, and therefore it doesn't make it easy for them just to drift off into sleep. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. And does hormones have anything to do with it, or going through menopause?
Well, yeah, specifically, actually, even getting closer to perimenopause, which is when your cycle's on and off. So let's just say 35 to 40 and above, this can get worse. Here's a couple reasons why. Your kids are teenagers now. That's making the kids even more stressed. So I thought kids in diapers was hard, but a lot of women tell me that the kids, when they're teenagers, are worse because you're driving them. So you got teenagers now. Your parents are getting elderly, so sometimes you're taking care of them. Sometimes you have multiple properties, or you have a boat, or you just have a lot going on, or maybe you have a bigger house now. So there's just a lot more going that way. But then the hormones are shifting. So we talked about this precious hormone called progesterone that God gave us. And progesterone is like, should be your best friend. It helps with your weight. We talked about that. It's a fat burner. It's a diuretic. It helps with your mood. And we talked about that, stabilizes your mood. But it also helps relax you and helps you fall asleep. So when you think about it that way, we don't want that hormone to be low. Well, getting around perimenopause or menopause, that hormone gets lower and lower. And stress will drain it. That's the best word I can say. Will drain it or use it up, to keep it simple, faster. So just like I said, these women around this age can have more stress, more things on their mind. Some of them have a family, plus they work, so it drains their progesterone. And that causes them not to be able to, let's say, turn their brains off at night. Does that make sense?
It's so true. I mean, between, like you said, the house, the career, the kids, and we're so multitasking in this world today that it just seems overwhelming and an epidemic.
Yeah, and night is your time to get refreshed. It's the only, sometimes women don't even do much for themselves during the day, which isn't good, but they're busy. And so night is the only time their brain gets supposedly shut off and their body gets rejuvenation. And that's the way God meant it. And if they're not sleeping, it's like they're not even getting that, and they're tossing and turning. So it's very, very interesting. And the funny thing, this is a little tidbit that I thought I'll throw in while we were talking about men and women. Men, now this is statistically, men sleep better with a spouse. Okay, so if their wife's away, maybe for some reason, they don't sleep as well in the bed. Whereas with their spouse, they sleep better. Whereas women actually sleep better alone. I mean, if they had to compare. Now, I don't know, and I'm not saying what to do with that information. I'm just saying if the woman out there is hearing that, she thinks she's crazy. The other thing that, and I'm jumping ahead with the tips only because it fits in with this. A lot of times people will have pets. I have three cats, and I love them to death. But the love ends at 11 o'clock at night when I shut my door and they have to not come in my bedroom because pets will disrupt your sleep. So you can actually be someone that sleeps fairly good, but if you're, you know, your cat's stepping on your head and your dog's laying on you. So pets are probably not good for the bedroom. Also, kids. A lot of times women have younger kids. They'll cry. They'll bring them into bed. And again, I'm not going to certainly tell women how to raise their kids, but the bedroom should just be for the man and wife and not having the animals and the kids, because that will also... You'll think you have problems sleeping, but if you get rid of those extra things, you'll be surprised that you can settle down more. Does that make sense?
It does. And I have a girlfriend that has five dogs sleeping in their bed with their spouse. So we're not going to name any names, but if she's listening, take note. But it's so true. And some people have their kids sleep with them.
I know. And it's just not, I mean, you have to, especially now, think of it this way. You're giving all day to your children. You're giving to your pets. And believe me, pets are just so lovely too. But at night has to be that deep sleep, because think of it, you're going into a deep sleep so you can be refreshed to take care of them better tomorrow. If you don't sleep good, you're going to be a little short with your dog who's barking too much, or short with your kid who spills his milk. So you really think of it as some time away to be refreshed so you can take care of them, the animals and the children and your husband, better, so that you don't have to feel guilty of having it. I mean, it's the only time you're alone, you know what I mean? Or alone or with your spouse, that you can actually not have the kids there. So that's something to really, really consider. And sometimes it's tricky. Sometimes I had a woman say, well, if I don't let my cat in the bedroom, it'll claw at the door. I had a cat like that, and I started to have to put him in the garage. I mean, I had to figure out, anyway, he liked it in the garage. He was running all, it was warm and safe, and then in the winter, I put him upstairs. But I didn't like doing that, but I had to come up with something, because he would just randomly in the middle of the night scratch at my door and wake me up. And like I said, that's where the love ends, because I have to sleep.
It's so
you might
true.
Have to be creative, but that's something that, you know, might sound like a little thing, but there's a lot of people that deal with that.
And
so,
you know, sleep deprivation over a period of time, you're going to be permanently cranky. It's just
definitely. It could cause long term. We talked about mood the other week, the other month. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Long term sleep deprivation will actually cause problems with the neurochemicals. Obviously, it'll cause problems with the hormones. It'll increase cortisol, which is the stress hormone, and that cortisol will be raised all the time. It'll constantly drain the progesterone because it's up, and that good hormone that we just talked about you won't have, and you'll also become insulin resistant, which means you're slowly on your way to diabetes, or you're definitely gaining weight. So I don't know if you ever heard that lack of sleep makes you gain weight, but it definitely does. Physiologically and psychologically, because if you're hungry during the day, you want to just kind of munch on the potato chips or something to give you energy. Have you ever experienced that?
It's so true. And broken sleep, and you're eating at different times, and just the whole schedule's messed up.
It really throws, and that's why we put our kids a lot of times, or babies, or on a good schedule, and we should try to be on a good schedule. So, you know, that's now, you know, so the best thing to do hormonally, and we're going to talk at the end about some tips, but just hormonally, is to try to lower the cortisol, increase the progesterone gently. I'm not a big fan of taking melatonin, and that's a sleep hormone, and people have heard about it.
Oh, yeah.
In the body. Here's why I'm not a big fan. I mean, is it better to take than a drug? Sure. But if you keep taking melatonin, which will doze you off and help you sleep, the body will produce less of it. So I'd rather work with some of these other hormones, you know, lower your stress, to lower the hormones. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And then we talked about before just a natural progesterone cream. My book, The Hormone Shift, you can just Google that. It talks about how to pick a good one. The Be Balanced website, we have some available there. But just a natural progesterone cream goes in and will help with mood, help with weight, and will help with sleep. So getting that hormone up, lowering your stress level, we're going to talk about that, but not necessarily jumping into the melatonin, because we don't want to. That's the one hormone that if you take it, especially if you're not necessarily low in it, you're just upset about something, that's why you can't sleep, your body will turn off its own reserves.
I know so many women taking melatonin. That's a very interesting thought.
I don't want to scare people. I'm not saying that it's the worst thing.
No, it is natural, but you're right. There's other better options out there.
Yeah, let's see what else we can do. I mean, certainly if someone's on a sleep drug, maybe to switch over to that for a little while and then slowly, you know, because I try to look at lifestyle changes. The only thing that I promote that women usually need long term is progesterone, because we're under so much stress in our country that we're constantly draining it. I could pull a 14-year-old girl off the street or a 6-year-old woman and test her progesterone, and it's always low. You know, and we can tell that by her symptoms. So that's the one that's like, ugh, if you live here, you need it. If you go live on a desert island, you probably don't need it. But that's usually not going to be
That's pretty
case,
rare.
So. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. But But yeah, so that's the thing, you know, to think about is lowering the stress levels, increasing the progesterone. Don't necessarily think about melatonin. But that's more natural. And obviously, there's the medical community deals with things different. I mean, you probably have friends that are on, like, some sleep aid drugs, correct?
Yes, I do. But what are your thoughts about that?
Well, here's what I will say, because I never want to make a woman feel bad if she's like, I really need this drug temporarily. I'm like, you know what, do what you need to do. But we all know that the you know, drugs are more of a long-term problem, a chronic problem. You want to come up with another solution besides taking a drug the rest of your life. I mean, it's just not. So there are sleep drugs. And what I will say is, if something traumatic happened and you need to sleep, I mean, your spouse dies or something happens to a child and you're just not sleeping for days, do whatever you need to do to get yourself to sleep, because sleep will then rebalance your neurochemicals, make you feel better. It's just, there's a class of drugs, and I don't like to name specific drugs because I'm not against any one drug, but there's a class of drugs that I'll mention, the benzodiazepines. They actually, here's what they do, there's a couple of real popular ones that you guys, I know that if I name the names, you would know. What they do is they increase GABA in the brain. It's GABA, like all caps, and it relaxes you and kind of is like, oh, everything doesn't matter. I can go to sleep. I can stop thinking about myself. That's what they do, and people give you drugs for that, and you can take them when you're – they're actually anxiety drugs. So you can take them when you're anxious during the day, or you can take them before bed. So here's the thing. The problem is they work, and they're very simple, and we understand how they work, but they are very addictive. So if someone's on them, they have to wean off. But here's the funny thing. Progesterone, which is natural, increases GABA as well. So think about it. If the woman wasn't under so much stress that her progesterone got drained away or used up, she would have enough GABA. She wouldn't need these benzodiazepines to work. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Okay.
So, yeah, so I'm not against them, but some of them are very, very addictive. And if you do take a sleep drug, please read about it, the side effects before you take it. Because there's one real popular one, which I won't mention, but it's like you could drive with this and not realize you're driving. You could get up and eat. You could dance. You could do – I mean, it's saying on its own website that crazy things can happen to you and you don't realize it.
It's
so, of course,
true.
If you're with a spouse, he would probably say, hey, hon, what are you doing? But if you're alone in a house, I've had some clients tell me some stories. So just be careful and let's, you know, look at some more natural things we can do. But that's generally what the medical community does. They have drugs that help either for anxiety or just sleep drugs. But either way, they can make you real groggy in the morning and they can be addicting.
Definitely can make you groggy. And like you said, it can be dangerous operating equipment or cars or people eating in the middle of the night, sleepwalking. That does have a lot of side effects for sure. But
so that's
if you can,
people just don't really, they just don't realize it. So I always say to them, please, if you're going to take a drug, you know, talk to your doctor about it. Obviously, he's probably prescribing it, but definitely read some of the side effects. And like I said, let's say it's a single woman. Maybe she shouldn't take this real popular drug that can cause her to get up and get in her car and almost be sleepwalking. Like, like no one would stop her. If I lived alone, I could do that. My cats aren't going to stop me, right?
Yeah. No, because you have them in the garage.
So, you know, like I say, think about that. Whereas it's a spouse, maybe the husband will say, okay, honey, I'll watch you at night. I'll make sure that, you know, you don't, whatever. But that's where doing the research and make sure, and if there's a short period of anxiety that something happens and someone needs an anti-anxiety med, I'm not against it. I'm just saying some of these other tips coming up are going to be a better way. And maybe as you slowly wean off the drug with your doctor's help, because the benzos you definitely have to wean off of, if you wean off of it, maybe you could add in some progesterone as therapy. You can add some of these other things in, and then you won't notice a big shift. You'll just be able to handle it slowly, if that makes sense.
It does. I guess I always thought God gave you enough estrogen, progesterone, but I never realized that the progesterone can be depleted.
That's
amazing.
That's the one that can. And as we talked about it, when your progesterone gets depleted, Dr. John Lee, who has passed away of old age at this point, but he's a medical doctor, so he wasn't even like he was holistic. He wrote 4 books on hormones. He was a big advocate of promoting progesterone therapy. He wrote, like, What Your Doctor Never Told You About Menopause or What Your Doctor Never Told You About Breast Cancer. It's John Lee, but he really promoted it. He came up with a term called estrogen dominance. And when I use it in my book, I put it in quotes because it's really his term. Estrogen dominance just means that you have way more estrogen in proportion to your progesterone. So estrogen's kind of an excitable hormone. I mean, we need it for our skin. We need it for our libido. We need it for ovulation. We need it for many things. So we don't want to not have it. But when it's dominant over progesterone, it will cause an overexcitability. So that's where it'll stimulate your pancreas. You'll have more cravings. You'll put on weight. You'll have bad moods. You can have anxiety. You can't sleep. It could overstimulate breast tissue, causing breast cancer. So we don't want estrogen to be left alone out of balance. We want to bring the progesterone up, which tempers the blood sugar and balances it and calms your mood and helps you sleep and helps you lose weight. So we just want them to be balanced.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
That does. So a person could come to the Be Balanced Centers and you would be able to work with them, help them, and lead them into the natural type supplements and lotions and hormonal balance type.
Yeah, we just assess everything based on symptoms. Everything that we do, we use homeopathic drops or we use a natural cream that any excess is urinated out. So the way, and that's the best type of way to do things, because we're not doing drugs. We're not, you know, having drugs, or we're not giving estrogen. We're not giving testosterone. You never need testosterone once your estrogen and progesterone gets balanced. So sometimes for libido, people say, oh, take testosterone. You don't even need it. It could cause side effects. And when you balance your estrogen and progesterone, I've never seen a woman not have her libido back and all that. Even if she's older, it doesn't matter. So we do everything naturally, and we also give, some of these tips I'm going to give you here. We also teach relaxation therapy. We teach what time to go to bed, which we'll talk about in a minute. We just give them overall what they need. Plus, if people need to lose weight, we have a certain diet that we put them on that balances their blood sugar. And when you balance your blood sugar, it makes you really, really, really calm. So we balance the blood sugar and have them burn their own fat. And when you burn your own fat for fuel, your blood sugar stays steady. It's not a roller coaster. And there's a certain calmness that comes to that. So I'll give an example. Like, if you ever, like, woke up in the morning and you had time, maybe with your family or something like that, and you went out and you had this big omelet for breakfast, maybe even some bacon. So you kind of had a lot of fat for breakfast. Maybe not as much starch or whatever. That breakfast will hold you, and you'll feel good all morning for several hours. You might even forget to eat lunch because your blood sugar is steady. You have fat going through your bloodstream, and you're not up and down. You're not craving. Another day, let's say you go to a famous, I won't say any names, a famous place that sells pancakes, and you have pancakes for breakfast. Pancakes with syrup and, I don't know, I don't even know what else you would have with that, but you have that, maybe waffles or something like that. And about an hour later, you are like a little bit nervous, jittery, you're like craving something, you're hungry again, because your blood sugar fell. Do you see
so
the difference
true.
When
yes,
you have
so
a bunch
true.
Of sugar in you?
Oh my goodness.
So that's kind of what we do. We put you on a diet that balances your blood sugar, and it has rapid weight loss as well, but you're burning your own fat for fuel. That type of a state sets you up during the whole day to be calmer, and then when you come into the evening, you just wind down and you can sleep so much easier. So your diet does play a part of that, and we're going to talk a little bit about that with some of the tips, how your diet can play into you sleeping better.
Talk about being balanced. It's so true. From your diet to your hormones to your sleeping patterns, and thus the name Be Balanced Centers. So,
right.
So I think that's a perfect.
We like that name because we used to have a different name called the Rejuvenation Center. But then with us, that was just my center. But then with us franchising, we thought this name makes so much sense, and it deals with hormones balance. And we really want you to have a balanced lifestyle. Like that's what it's all about, from your spirituality to your physicality. To your emotions, I mean, all that. If it's all balanced and everything's in moderation, you're going to be able to sleep. You're going to be able to lose weight. You're going to, you know, and we do it in a way that it makes sense scientifically, and we like to promote it so that the women get fast results. And when they get fast results, they get motivated, like, oh my gosh, I just lost weight, or oh my gosh, I'm sleeping better. And then they get excited to stick with it. And then, you know, it's hard. If you're not getting results, how much fun is it to stick with something? You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I just think it's wonderful. You work with men and women, but I see this focus of Be Balanced Centers on women. And I think women need that. I think they're told from doctors, it's all in their mind. It's their head. Take two aspirin, call me in the morning. Like, I think it's wonderful that you focus on getting women balanced, and it's not made up and it's not in our mind. But
no, right. That's what I'm saying. We're validating them, and they really appreciate the stuff I'm saying. So let's get into now, if that's okay. Let's touch on some of the things, some natural ways that we can promote sleep.
That'd be great.
Better sleep. We touched on the lowering the cortisol, and there's ways of doing that, which I'll touch on in a minute here, but also watching the progesterone and getting that up and balancing with estrogen. That's a huge foundation. That'll help.
Okay.
But also, people don't realize the more sleep that you get before 12 o'clock almost counts as double sleep. So you know how we're always like, get 8 hours of sleep. Well, here's the real sleep truth. From the National Institutes of Health, the real studies show, now this is going to sound crazy, but I'm just going to say it, in September through, let's say, April, that's considered winter. You know, summer is, you know, like a little bit of May, June, July, and August. So summer is short, and most of the time is considered winter from a hibernation standpoint. Let's say it that way. In the winter, which is most of the year, we're supposed to get 9.5 hours of sleep, okay?
Okay.
Now, I know it's a lot, and I'm just saying that so that if people get six, oh, I get six, that's good. No, that's about a third less than you're supposed to get. So I'm not trying to say go for more than 7.5 or 8. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying when you realize it's supposed to be 9, the standard in the winter is that high, 6 is just not going to cut it. And if you're having problems with your health, you're going to want to start increasing your sleep.
Okay.
So that's that. Now, in the summer, which is the shorter, you know, like May, June, July, August, it's down to 7.5.
Okay.
So that gives you, it's a little...
Oh,
a little
good. We have more time to play.
yeah, because it's light longer. So think about it. So a lot of people get seasonal affective disorder, SAD. They'll get that more in the winter time. And it's because in the winter time, we were meant to be in darkness. Back in the olden days, right? They'd knit by the fire, and then the fire goes out, and you just... What else are you going to do? It's pitch black. You just go to sleep, and you wake up at the crack of dawn. What do? We have our Kindles. We have our TV. We have our little phones with the lights on. We have we have a YouTube. We can watch TV and have light shining in our eyes up till 2 in the morning if we want to. And that's not healthy. That throws off your melatonin, throws off all our hormones. So the earlier we can cut it. Now, we're not going to go to bed as soon as it gets dark, obviously, because around, we switch the clocks and all that. But so if you can go to bed, I mean, here's what I think is reasonable. If people can go to bed at 10, that would be, so then you at least get 2 hours before 12. If you can go to bed at 9, I'd love it. But I know that's kind of hard. But the more sleep you get, so that if you aim for even 7 or 8 hours, if more of them are before 12, it's deeper and better sleep. Because as soon as the light comes up in the morning and shines through your window onto your skin, your hormones think it's time to wake up, and your cortisol goes up, and you're not into as deep of a sleep.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
That's
so
interesting.
So if you said to me, now here's what I used to do. I used to be like, oh, well, I need 8 hours sleep. So I would aim for 8, and I'd be like, I'll just go to bed at 1 and sleep to 9. Or my favorite thing would be go to bed at 2 and sleep till 10. Well, that 2 to 10 is not going to make me feel as refreshed as 10 to 6. Does that make sense? So
sure.
The earlier, the better. So let's keep that in mind. I'm not saying that's going to be perfect, but it's something to know. It's something that's important.
Maybe we'll just put darker blinds on the windows.
Well, that's the other thing. I was just going to say, one thing you can do for your bedroom, and I think they even said this on the Dr. Oz show, is try to make your room as dark as possible. And people that have shift work, that really messes you up, but make it dark, 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 because it's about the light.
Okay.
They did a study at University of Chicago, and they put people in a pitch black room, and they even covered their eyes, okay? So it's pitch black, and they couldn't see anything. But they put a tiny little flashlight shining on the back of their knee just all night, okay, that little bit of light. And the next morning, it threw off their melatonin levels. It threw them off. So it's showing
you
a little teeny bit of light. So make your room as dark as possible. Maybe don't have the alarm light, right? When you turn over, that kind of shines in your eyes. Maybe cover that or have a different type. Try not to have a big night light. You want a little light because you don't want to kill yourself when you wake up to go to the bathroom. want to figure that out. But as dark as you can make it, that sunlight doesn't shine in, so that even if you sleep until 8 in the morning at 6 when the sun comes out, your skin's still bathed in darkness.
Okay. Very good tips. Okay.
So that's at least a good thing. The other thing is think of a cave and try to make your house a little bit cooler. So in the winter, that will save you on energy. Get under the covers. It's better to have good covers. You want to sleep with not a lot of clothing on or loose clothing because clothing can turn and be confining. But you want to make sure you have plenty of blankets on your bed so that you're warm in the winter, but your head is out and the head's staying cooler. So if the temperature in the room is in the 60s, your head's cooler, but your body is warm under the blankets, not necessarily with 10 layers of clothes on. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's good. And what are some of the final tips that you have, Dawn?
Well,
us?
The couple other things would just be do not have caffeine. Because it can stay in your system for 7 hours. So if you have it in the morning and then not anymore during the day, don't have alcohol because that'll make you fall asleep quick and then wake up in the middle of the night. And then have a protein shake before bed. that is a liquid, I mean, a powder protein, digest easy. Maybe put some coconut oil in it because that burns slow, or flaxseed oil. And that will put you into a deep sleep and your blood sugar won't drop in the middle of the night. You won't wake up in the middle of the night.
Oh, that's a really good tip. Okay, yes. That's a great tip. And for other tips, Dawn, how can our audience get in touch with you?
Well, basically, I'll give our number, but let me give the website first. The website, yeah, matter of fact, the website will have the number on it. If they look up Be Balanced Centers, and that's just with an S, C-E-N-T-E-R, Be Balanced Centers, all one word, there's a quick hormone test. They can see a little survey to see if they have an imbalance, and then there's some great videos on there, and then our Contact Us page has our number. It's 717-569-3040, 717-569-3040. That's on there as well. Email us any questions. We'll help you out. But, yeah, so hopefully some of these tips can be raising the progesterone and doing some of these other things will make a big difference.
Thank you so much for coming on again today, Dawn. We're so proud to have you with us. Dawn is from the franchise of Be Balanced Centers, and she's also the author of The Hormone Shift. Thank you for joining us today because our health
You're
matters.
Welcome.
Thank you. And being balanced matters. And I am Renee with In Touch Marketing Concepts.
Be my home.